Thank you. Good morning, and welcome to Uncle Paul's Jazz Closet. This is your host, Cindy McGurl, and today's show is featuring a cassette recording that I had digitized of Paul Modian practicing piano. And I have a special guest in the studio, Steve Lindsay. You can say hi, Steve.
Hello.
You're on. and so Steve's going to help me talk about music, because I'm not really that knowledgeable about it. And he plays the piano, but you probably all know him more as an artist and sculptor. And I want to thank my partner, the Camden Conference, before we get started. So what you just heard was Le Voyage from the Paul Modian album Le Voyage, 1979 ECM release, with Paul Modian on drums, Charles Brackeen on saxophone, and J.F. Jenny Clark on bass. And then I'm going to play a little practice of that song from Paul's cassette next. But I wanted to talk a little bit about how the show came about. So Ethan Iverson, who many of you probably follow his blog, he was in touch with Deborah Green, who was Paul's piano teacher in the 1970s. And Paul did write about her a little bit in his book. And I've read that on the show before, but I'll read it again in a little later in the show. And so he was in contact with her because he wrote a big piece about Hall Overton. And Hall Overton was Deborah Green's teacher, and Deborah's mother, Lucy Green, was a pianist who played some of Hall's tunes. So they get talking, and she said she was Paul Modian's teacher, so he put us in touch with each other, and we had a very interesting conversation. So the first thing she said was that Paul was a terrible pianist, and I was a bit taken aback. But it all makes sense, really. And I don't know, I think he sounds pretty good. I've enjoyed listening to this practice tape.
But I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Yeah. So I'm going to play that first, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about it. Thank you. So that was Paul Modian playing and practicing his tune, Leur Voyage. So a couple of the really big things I got out of this conversation with Deborah Green is that Paul took piano lessons with her from October 17th, 1974 to October 4th, 1977. And these were weekly lessons, except when he was out of town or, you know, on tour and things. And so Deborah kept saying, wow, I wish I had known who he was and what he was trying to do. We didn't really talk that much. And he was practicing, Bach, a lot of Bach, which is a fairly intermediate and complicated music, I guess. And so she said his hands weren't suited to the piano because he was a drummer, you know, so he was used to using his whole hand. Do you play other instruments, Steve, besides the piano?
Yes, I play the conga drums.
You play the drums, so you know that difference.
Yeah, and they don't go together very well from a point of view of your hands.
Yeah, yeah. So it made me realize, one, that, you know, Paul, he worked really hard. He wasn't a natural at the piano. And he also, he just was so dedicated to practice and sort of change your whole hand thing because he wanted it to help his composing. I'm going to read what Paul wrote in his autobiography. The pianist, composer, and arranger, Hall Overton, was very kind and helpful. He recommended Lucy Green as a piano teacher for me. I had asked to study with him, and he suggested Lucy Green as a starting point. By the time I finally phoned for lessons with Miss Green, many years later, she didn't want to take on a beginner, and so her daughter Deborah took me on as a piano student. I learned quite a lot during the few years of study with Deborah, a wonderful teacher. The reason for the piano study was so that I would become familiar with the piano keyboard. I thought it would help me in my music writing. Here I was in my 40s with my piano books under my arm, feeling like a schoolboy as I walked the 10 blocks to Deborah's apartment. It was a good feeling, a feeling of accomplishment. I was studying the classics, playing Chopin and Beethoven and Bach. During one of my lessons, I glanced down at my hands as I was playing, and I didn't recognize them. It was as if they were the hands of a stranger. They were playing the piano by themselves and playing quite well, as if on their own, as if I had nothing to do with it. So the really funny thing about that is, she said, a story I always tell everybody about Paul Modian is one time when he was playing the piano and his hands were just doing everything right. And he had this look of shock on his face. And it's the same story that he wrote about. It's so funny. But she had a whole ending that he left out where she said, so he was playing and we were both sort of watching. And she said, then he started getting really nervous and he started sweating. And and finally he just had to stop because he was just sweating profusely and really nervous. And she said he quit a few months after that. He stopped taking lessons. So,
well, one thing that's very telling in the whole episode is that somebody in their 40s was willing to become a beginner. He was willing to, a highly accomplished musician with a career, and he was interested in music and where it was going and how he could get better.
Yeah.
And was willing to take on this project, which is considerable.
Yeah.
Trying to learn piano in your 40s. It's like learning a language. It's easier to do when you're 10.
Yeah, exactly. And he was, you know, he was pretty well known at that point. You know, he's playing with Keith Jarrett. He had already, the Bill Evans thing was way in the past.
Yes.
And he was a well-regarded musician and on the scene for a long time.
And he could have rested on his laurels, but he wanted to go further.
He did.
So that was interesting that he was willing to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he must have gotten pretty good if he was playing some Chopin. I don't know whether it was simplified or whether, you know, there are different levels of additions, but that's pretty good if he could be playing Chopin.
It is, yeah. So, and he, you know, I think I don't know, I think he sounds all right, don't you?
That recording of Le Voyage is very simple.
Yeah, it's very simple.
It's not simple harmonically.
Uh-huh.
But it's sort of level one for playing piano, where you hold down a triad or a chord in the left hand,
uh-huh,
and then play something over the top.
Yeah.
With the other hand. So it's very simple.
From
the point of view of piano playing.
Uh-huh. And I think all his compositions are fairly simple that way.
I thought of something when you mentioned that his hands weren't suitable for the piano.
Yeah.
Famously, Lionel Hampton, was a drummer and then became famous as a vibraphonist.
Uh-huh.
But apparently he also would take piano solos, but as a vibraphonist, he played them with two fingers. He played the whole solo using his fingers as mallets on the piano.
Uh-huh.
So that's how he got around that problem of not having hands for the piano.
Yeah, and Paul had written too, the piano is a percussion instrument.
That's true.
And so I think he tried to look at it that way. But it is, right?
It is.
It's because of the hammers.
Because it's a hammer. It's using hammers.
Yeah.
It's a very mechanical percussion instrument.
Uh-huh. Okay, so next up I have a cut that Paul called Armenian Melody in A. Thank you. That was Armenian Melody in A, Palmodian practicing on piano. Not sure if it became anything specific. But I am going to play next his song Yala, which Yala is Armenian and sort of a general Middle Eastern expression that means, hurry up, come on, let's go.
On that last tune, do you know if there was a source that was an Armenian tune, or is it an Armenian feeling tune?
I'm not sure. He didn't specify. Yeah. So I think he did. He really did study Armenian music. There was an ethnographer named Komitas. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
He was Armenian, and he went around and he collected Armenian folk music at different villages and stuff in the early 20th century, and I believe he was murdered, one of the first people murdered in the Armenian genocide. Mm-hmm. They collected all the intellectuals and artists in Istanbul and sort of marched them away, and a lot of them died. He might be one who survived, but pretty much lived out the rest of his life with a lot of mental health problems. But so he did a lot of research, and I think Paul, he had albums and things from when he was a kid that his parents listened to. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. A lot of his early music does have sort of a Middle Eastern feel, and there's a lot of bells and different percussion instruments. And I think a lot of that has that feeling, you know.
That piece, the Armenian melody, had a drone. Is that something that's common?
I don't even know what that is. A drone?
Like a bagpipe.
Oh.
He was using the left hand was playing one chord, actually a fifth. Staying right on A minor, basically. And then the melody wove around that. And it is like a bagpipe. I know the bagpipes exist down in that area.
They do? Yeah.
Yeah. I just was wondering if it was associated with Armenian music.
It might be. I don't know. Maybe someone listening who knows more technical stuff. It's funny, Paul didn't really. I remember I asked him a question once. I had gone to hear this oud player locally, Alan Bardazbanian. Did you know him? Al Gardner was his. That was his name that he grew up with. But he was actually he was Armenian. He lived in Brunswick, mm-hmm. and he came up here and he gave a lesson before a concert that he was a part of. And I got really excited because I love the way the oud sounds, and I got there early to make sure I got a seat and stuff. And I got there. There was only like six people there. I was like, this can't be real. And it was incredibly interesting. Middle Eastern music is so limitless compared to Western music. You know, I guess they have limitless. Is it chords? I'm not really sure. They have a bigger range of what they can do.
I think they use quarter tones. So some different notes that we're not.
Yeah, things that we don't do at all.
And they use different scales.
And there's this whole improvisation history too, that they do that I think relates to jazz. But I had a question about all that, a technical question, and I was embarrassed to ask it to Al Gardner, because everyone else there was a musician, except for me. And so I said, oh, I'll just ask Paul when I go home. So I called him up, and he said, that's a really good question. I have no idea what the answer is. You should have asked Al. So I don't think he was that schooled in it. He said he wasn't. I wanted to mention that after I talked to Deborah, too, so I started looking in Paul's calendar. And so she made me, I didn't realize that Paul wrote two albums worth of songs, Conception Vessel and Tribute, without having any piano lessons. So he was composing before. And if you look in the songbook, his early works do look different. They're a little more, visually, they're a lot more crowded and there's a lot more going on. And so if you look at Conception Vessel is a song, Inspiration from a Vietnamese Lullaby is another early song. And they do look different. So I think things did really change. And he didn't really, those early songs don't get recorded again. So I think he was happier with the compositions after he had the music lessons. But I think that makes sense. So I wanted to see when he started the lesson. So I found it in his book. October 14, 1974 is the day that the piano was delivered. And it was an Everett Baby Grand. And it was the piano that Keith Jarrett learned to play on. Paul was playing with Keith at the time. And Keith sold him that piano for $700 on time. So Paul paid a little bit when he could until it was paid off. And Keith really encouraged Paul to play piano, to learn how to play and to compose. And we know that Keith's album, Bayou Blue, is almost all Paul Modian compositions. So I'm just going to read this because there's another funny thing that I found. Piano, 8 a.m. at Jarrett's. Mr. Yard, Chase Movers, paid $130 plus $10 tip. Piano tuner, Mr. Kowalski, 6 p.m., Tuesday, October 15th. 2 hours to tune. And then on Thursday, so only a couple days later, 1 p.m., piano lesson, Deborah Green. So he really got started right away. But the funny thing that I wanted to say is, so on that Tuesday, so Paul had just bought, he had this this car that he bought from Charlie Hayden, and it was this maroon, I'm forgetting what kind of car it was. It was like a Chevy Nova or something. And he used to always come visit us in Rhode Island in that car, but I think he had just gotten it then. But here's a note. It says, go to 32nd Street and Park Avenue, motor vehicles, protest parking ticket. Then he writes later, found guilty, paid $20, will appeal. On that Friday, he says he went to look at a garage. Take the garage, Park Yorkshire Garage, $50 per month, including tax. Pay $25 for half the month. Anyway, I always do stuff like that, get really indignant, and then like, oh, wow.
What happened to the Everett Baby Grand? You know where that is now?
Yeah, well, Paul had it, you know, he had it right. Yeah. It was in his apartment, and actually on the Facebook post I did for this show, I posted a photo of it.
That's that piano.
Yeah, but Paul told me that Keith was going to take the piano back so that when he passed away, that Keith would take care of it. And because he knew that I didn't play the piano, and mm-hmm. a baby grand is kind of a big thing to move and figure out. Yeah. And so this is actually a really good story. So as I was packing up his apartment and all that, these arrangements were being made. I never talked to Keith. It was through different people, like And so it turned out that the piano was being moved to Keith's brother's apartment, which wasn't too far from Paul's. And Keith's brother has a son who was like about 12 years old at the time, who was taking piano lessons.
Oh, wonderful.
And they really, and they didn't have a piano. So they were rearranging their entire small apartment to have fit this piano so that Keith's nephew could practice at home. And it turned out that a good friend of Paul's who was helping me knew the family because their kids did things together. I don't know if they were at the same school or took music lessons together. And Keith's brother's really nice. He was a drummer back in the day, I guess. And I had been thinking that, you know, like, well, gee, it's kind of a shame that this piano's going back to Keith because he's never going to play it. He probably has some really fancy pianos now that, so it has a great home.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And back in the family.
So. Yeah, and back in the Jarrett family. Okay, so we're going to play Yala. So this is a Middle Eastern-inspired tune that Paul wrote. See if, Steve, if it really is or not.
Thank you.
Getting a little buzz here in the speakers. I'm not sure why. I mean, in the headphones, but I don't think it's going out over there. Hopefully it's not. Yeah, so that was two little Armenian melody practices, I think. And then at the top of the set, we heard Yala, Paul's tune from Psalm, a 1982 ECM release with Joe Lovano and Billy Drews on saxophones, Bill Frisell on guitar, Ed Schuler on bass, and Paul Modian on drums. So, do you think those sounded Middle Eastern?
Well, I think the first one sounded like Yala.
Yeah, it was Yala, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And the other two, I don't know.
Maybe no, just the piano, uh-huh. The solo piano sounded like Yala.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Oh, so maybe he was sort of composing it then.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I said this on the air, that this cassette tape is labeled 1978, but that was... The original recording on it was, it said Munich, so I think it was a Keith Jarrett concert or something that he recorded over, so it's likely it's a little bit later. It could even be as late as 1980. I think I have one other cassette with a piano on it, and that's like, I think it was 1981 or so. Paul never played the piano in front of hardly anyone. So I guess maybe...
You know, I don't know when Keith Jarrett did it, but Keith Jarrett took up the soprano saxophone at some point.
Uh-huh.
And he would play that.
Oh, yeah.
In concerts. And I remember seeing Keith Jarrett at the Village Vanguard in the 70s and kind of wishing he'd put that saxophone down and get back to the piano.
Oh, really? He had to play the flute, too, yeah.
I never saw him play the flute, but I know he enjoyed his... is a soprano saxophone, and I do think a lot of musicians branch out and want to try other things.
Yeah. Yeah. So do most people who write music play the piano, would you say?
They teach it, I think, in conservatories because it's a very good way to visualize what you're doing.
Uh-huh.
And so I think, everybody's worked with a piano.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure, like Frank Zappa, I don't know what he composed on. He was famously illiterate as a musician.
Oh, really?
Huh. And he composed things by writing them using computers and synthesizers and keyboards and different things to get what he wanted. But I'm not sure what his technique was. But a keyboard is a very common way for people to envision writing.
Yeah, so I'm going to take us to the top of the hour with Victoria, which is named for Paul's aunt, and who was Armenian. But it's from Tribute. So this is before he had piano lessons. We'll see what that's like.